This episode of Film Scene is being brought to you by our new Zazzle store. For our logoed shirts, mugs, and stickers, go to zazzle.com/filmscene.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's showtime.
From Chicago, this is Film Scene, your classic movie source. I'm your host, Tim Gordon, and joining me today is co-host Karen Gordon.
Hello!
All right, then. And we have our special guest back today, Walter Gordon.
Hi.
He's never going back to school.
Ever.
Ever.
So, as we wheedle our way through the 100 years, 100 movies list from...
Wheedle? Wheedle.
Is that okay?
Whittle.
I like Weedle.
Whittle. I think Weedle is something different.
So we're still tackling
okay.
The AFI 100 movies, 100 years, 100 movies list, and we're up to number 93 from 1960. This is Billy Wilder's The Apartment, starring Jack Lemmon, Shirley MacLaine, Fred McMurray, and an assorted cast of character actors.
Yes.
So, TCM's synopsis is, an aspiring executive lets his bosses use his apartment for assignations. Only to fall for the big chief's mistress. Yeah, I had to look up what that word was. Had you ever heard that before?
Assignations? Yes.
Oh, must just be me then.
Yeah, most likely.
So this is a widescreen movie shot in black and white, which was... fairly rare at this time period, even though Psycho came out the same year. That's one of the things that I like about it, though, is the cinematography. What do you think?
I think it's a very nicely shot film.
Plus the production design, especially at the beginning when he's one of many in these rows and rows of cubicles that seem to stretch on forever past the horizon.
I could give you some trivia about that, but maybe I'll hold off.
Yeah, that's a shot that's borrowed from The Crowd.
But the way they did that shot is a bit strange.
Well, I know there's a lot of forced perspective.
Oh, there's more than forced perspective. I'll just tell you now. The people up front are real, like, life-size human adults. And I don't, well, there's probably not a politically correct way to say it. As the shot goes back farther, because he wanted you to see all of the kind of nameless faces and such, he actually made the desk smaller and found smaller statured people to sit in them all the way down to little people.
Little people.
Little people. I'm thinking there could have been a different way to force that perspective other than hiring little people to sit in the very back of the shot, but that is how they did that.
Well, I think the biggest difference between that time period and now is if you did a shot like that now, there wouldn't be quite as many employees.
There certainly wouldn't be as
Well, I think it's just
noise.
Now there'd be cubicles.
Well, they had cubicles. They just didn't have very high walls, right?
No, they just had desks.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, you wouldn't have a fully staffed office anymore.
True.
So the gist here is, as in the synopsis from TCM, is that Jack Lemmon is a single guy. Seems kind of lonely, sad sack type of guy.
Get that.
You don't think so? Maybe it's just him.
What movie are you watching?
Yeah, what movie are you watching?
No, I meant you.
No, I don't think he's a sad sack kind of guy. I think he's just a single guy.
Watching?
I don't think, you know, there's anything deeper than that. He just wants to get ahead a little bit, but he's not overly ambitious.
So he has an apartment. Bless you.
Sorry.
That somehow his bosses started using for their illicit rendezvous.
Their assignations?
Yeah. And there's, five or six of them that kind of rotate in and out. There's a scene in the movie where he's trying to reschedule them and has to make all these phone calls to try to get them all to move around to different days of the week so that he could actually have his own apartment for a night when he was sick. So eventually what happens is the main boss of the company wants to use the apartment for his own affair. And that's how Jack Lemmon is able to move up through the company. From a guy with just a desk to an office and then an executive office with privileges to the executive washroom.
Which I think that's a funny thing.
That's a thing?
Yes.
That's even a locked...
Executive washroom.
A locked bathroom. Yeah.
Talk about segregation.
Yeah.
Interesting.
As it turns out, his boss is having an affair with someone that Jack Lemmon himself also had eyes for. A elevator operator in the building, played by Shirley MacLaine. Most of the action takes place in two different sets. You have the stuff at the office and then the stuff in his own apartment. There's a couple scenes in bars and such, but the majority of it takes place in those two settings. Eventually, it's clear to Shirley MacLaine's character that Fred McMurray, as the main boss, doesn't ever want to leave his own wife for her, which he keeps talking about doing. And when that happens, they're in Jack Lemmon's apartment, and she decides she's going to kill herself, as in any good romantic comedy.
Well, of course.
So she takes a bunch of Jack Lemmon's sleeping pills, and Lemmon eventually comes home and finds her there, and they spend, several days together as he nurses? Yes. To me, that's the point of the movie, right? Do you feel like that?
That he's a good guy?
Well, and that's how their relationship really builds, is them spending this time together when she's kind of trapped there, getting better in his apartment.
Well, I think he's naively shocked that his boss would do something like this. To a degree, anyway.
Well, he's surprised that's who the boss is having an affair with.
But why would you be surprised at that? The way the entire film is set up, all of the men are in this kind of madman sort of way.
So we also find out, along with Shirley MacLaine's character, that she's not the first to enjoy the company of Fred McMurray.
Yeah, that's a weird thing to say.
He had also had an affair with his own secretary, who's still there, and someone else before that she alludes to.
I thought it was both of his secretaries.
At that time?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yes.
I thought she just talked about another person before that.
Yes, I thought it was both of his secretaries, and then some since then.
So what do you think of Shirley MacLaine's character? What do you make of her?
Well, I think she's supposed to be kind of young and dumb. And not that she's a dumb human being, but she just doesn't know what she doesn't know yet. And seems far too trusting that he's actually going to leave his wife for her.
Well, and they allude to something that happened in her past that caused her to move to the city in the first place. Like she had some other kind of romance that didn't necessarily end well. And that's why she ended up there in the first place. So.
Well, I think towards the end, when she's rehabbing from her overdose, you get the implication, the feeling that she feels like she deserves nothing but a loser. It's like, that's just her run of luck in life. She's meant to be with these loser guys who are going to treat her horribly.
So you saw Fred McMurray as a loser?
Well, yeah, of course.
Huh.
Well, you didn't?
Well, I guess I didn't think about him in that way.
I did.
I just saw him as a cheat.
Well, aren't they? Did they go hand in hand?
Several times over.
Well, don't they go hand in hand?
But he was successful. He wasn't like a...
Well, no, financially he wasn't a loser, but we all know money doesn't buy you classiness.
No.
I mean, he's kind of a jerk, but... And we kind of talked about this briefly before, that idea of, is the stereotype hold up? I mean, do you think that many men were really running around and cheating in the 50s and 60s?
The rich man.
But why?
What do you mean, why?
Because they could.
Yeah.
Well, so you're saying it's just a power thing?
And they don't necessarily say that all the guys are married. You assume that, and I think that too, but...
Why do they have to use somebody else's apartment if they're not married?
I don't know.
And they're older men, so I think it's assumed that they are.
Hmm. So you don't see Jack Lemmon's character as a sad sack, though, huh?
I don't think he's a sad sack. I think he's just... I just don't think he's found his way yet. And he seems to lack some...
He failed trying to kill himself.
Yeah, they allude to that, too, that he...
Well, hopefully most people do.
That he also, at one point, tried to kill himself.
Right? I mean, he is a goof, but I don't think he's, you know, pathetic or anything.
Do you think his ultimate goal in all this was to get ahead and get to the better offices?
I think it started out as something probably innocent, kind of like he explained in the movie. But then once people started offering things, it started to change him somewhat. I mean, I don't think it popped into his head to do that, but once people started offering it up to him, suddenly that was an option.
Right.
No, I like his character in this. He's a likable goof.
So I see all three of these leads as being lonely.
I think they're all flawed.
And kind of sad.
Really? I mean, even Fred McMurray. It is a sad film in a dark, kind of funny way.
They show a scene with Fred McMurray with his kids on Christmas. And even that seems like he's kind of awkward with them and doesn't really know them. And when Jack Lemmon calls him on the phone to tell him what had happened, the wife, you know, kind of comes in and kind of accuses him, like, who are you talking to? So it seems like she kind of knows that maybe something's going on, too.
I think all these wives knew. Not that they show it, but again, I've seen enough episodes of Mad Men to know. They all know, but they like the trappings of wealth and success just as much. So there's things I guess they're supposed to tolerate from their spouses.
I suppose. Was it before the suicide attempt when his secretary spilled the beans on the other affairs that had happened before? Is that
that's what triggers her.
Right. That's what kind of pushes her
over the edge, yes. It is not the part where the secretary calls the wife.
And also for Christmas, he gives her cash.
Which makes her feel like a whore.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Well, again, there's that implication of, you know, go buy yourself something.
Right.
You know, like she's provided him with a service.
So Fred McMurray finds out that the secretary had spilled the beans and fires her. But to get back at him, the secretary then has lunch with the wife.
Yep.
Good move.
Hey. Why not?
And that actually triggers the real divorce for Fred McMurray, right?
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end of the movie, he actually tries to get back with Shirley MacLaine then.
Well, because she foolishly thinks he left his wife for her.
Right.
Not that his wife booted him.
Yeah. Now, he still wants to use the apartment, though. And Jack Lemmon is finally had enough because he realizes that he's fallen for her.
Well, he also realizes he's being used.
True. Although, does he care to that extent?
I think he realizes at the end that he has been everybody's doormat.
Maybe.
And he makes the choice, well, eventually to leave.
Yeah, he leaves the company and...
And his apartment.
Right. Doesn't let anyone else use the apartment. And he decides he's just going to basically leave town, I guess, right?
Yeah.
They don't really go into much detail, but he's able to pack everything he owns in a couple hours. So.
In about four boxes.
So when Shirley MacLaine finds this out from Fred McMurray that they can't go to the apartment because he specifically said he can't use it, that Jack Lemmon said to Fred McMurray that he can't use it anymore, especially with Shirley MacLaine, she realizes that she's chosen the wrong man, perhaps, and runs back to Jack Lemmon. Would you have done that?
I suppose, but I think I would feel foolish because the right guy was there the whole time. She just didn't recognize it as such.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, you get the impression that he had a flirtation with her all along, but
right.
She was just being the elevator girl, innocently flirting with him.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know that it was always a two-way street.
To me, the most unrealistic thing is when she goes back to Fred McMurray. I don't know that she would have done that.
I think so. I think some women are that, like I said before, she believed that that's what she deserved, so that's what she looked for. But that's the most unbelievable thing. I think what's most unbelievable is that he can get an apartment for $64 a month, like a block from Central Park.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a little unbelievable.
Yeah, but like I said, this is when they had rent control.
Yeah, but still.
Well, he was probably making $65 a week, so.
Ooh.
Quarter of his salary was going to his rent, so that's not so bad. We also get his interactions with his neighbors, especially the neighbor right next door, a doctor and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
how do you say this guy's name? Jack Crucian?
Yep. That's how I'd say it, as Dr. Dreyfus.
Who was also nominated for an Oscar for this movie. And it's kind of funny because they hear all this noise constantly coming out of Jack Lemmon's apartment and they think he's a real player, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, why doesn't he just admit to them, it's not me, I'm loaning it out to some people?
They don't make that clear, but I wonder if there's...
He'd get kicked out?
Right, he's worried about losing the apartment, you know.
Yeah, I don't think that behavior would be looked upon favorably.
Well, and I don't...
Well, would it be looked upon favorably that he's got girl after girl coming in, either?
Yeah. It's better than people thinking he's using it like a brothel or something.
Well, yeah, in a roundabout way, he's kind of like a pimp that's not a pimp.
Well, and it's almost like he's subletting the place, too.
I suppose.
So that guy was nominated for an Oscar, and both Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine were nominated. None of them won. The movie itself won for Best Picture, and Billy Wilder won for Best Director, though, which is kind of amazing. Don't you think so?
I suppose.
You don't think about it quite that much?
Not as much as you seem to, no.
I guess the more amazing thing is Psycho came out the same year and was not nominated for Best Picture.
Well, that was a bit different.
And also Spartacus, not nominated.
Like, what was nominated?
The Apartment.
Oh.
And it won.
It won, yeah.
I think The Alamo came out the same year. And it was nominated. So, do you have any fun facts or trivia for The Apartment there?
Always. We already talked about the diminutive people in the office scenes. This was the last black and white film to win. And this is even up for debate. It's the last black and white film to win since at least Schindler's List, but some people claim that parts of that are in color, so it doesn't count. Oh. In which case, that would take it up to The Artist in, I believe, 2011-ish? Yep. Okay. So, yeah, this was the last black and white one.
Hmm.
Huh. Isn't that interesting?
You know, I didn't find anything that said why he chose to film it that way either. Did you?
No, I did not. I did not.
The movie right before this, I think, was Some Like It Hot, which was also filmed in black and white.
Correct.
So maybe he just had an affinity for black and white film.
True. Psycho was in black and white.
True.
Yeah, but that was also on a pretty low budget.
Well, yeah. Maybe that was the reason for this as well.
Well, I don't know. Since it was widescreen, it's different.
Or stylistically, that's how it should look?
I mean, that's not a complaint in any way. I was just curious.
I mean, to me, the style of it calls for a black and white. I mean, it's kind of a downer of a film in a roundabout way.
Well, and you get that theory, especially at that time, that people saw black and white things as being like what they would watch on the news. Mm-hmm. So black and white was more like real life and color was the fantasy. So maybe they were just trying to present it as more realistic. What else you got?
What else do I have? Well, our cat's trying to tell us something. One of the interesting questions that comes up on frequently asked questions for this film was slapping really the prescription for an overdosed patient in the 60s?
Yeah, and coffee.
And coffee. They were saying that the point was to keep her conscious.
So. Right.
And that the doctors on the set actually thought she should have been slapped harder in the film than she was. But he clocks her a couple times.
Maybe they just didn't like her.
Oh, no.
Well, Shirley MacLaine.
I like this. You know, this is probably my favorite Shirley MacLaine film.
Well, yeah, this was before she went crazy.
Well, I think she was always a little bit cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
I'm never a big fan of hers, but I really like her in this movie for whatever reason.
It's such a departure from, I mean, the one of our generation that I always remember is Terms of Endearment, where she's the overbearing, horrible mother.
Well, at this time, she always played kind of ditzy goofballs, so.
True.
It was right in that wheelhouse.
Kind of Rat Pack persona.
Right.
At the time, it said she was, during breaks in filming for this, she would film Ocean's 11, her small scene in that.
Yeah.
So, which was released the same year, I think?
I don't know. That was basically a glorified cameo.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Absolutely. But yeah, that's one weird piece of trivia. The lamps in his apartment, apparently there's a couple Tiffany lamps in there that were, weren't worth a lot then. Now they're worth about $40,000 each. So
I remember hearing that before.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
And yet he has to strain his pasta with a tennis racket. So.
Yes. So we can assume the apartment was pre-furnished?
Maybe. Yeah, he didn't have those packed at the end, did he?
No, he did not. He did not. And I did check. This was not from a play.
Yeah, it's one of those that I could see them doing as a play now, though.
Well,
yeah.
They were still writing the script as they filmed it, so it definitely wasn't a play.
Yes, I did read that some of the actors were confused that they were the leads, but their scripts were so short. Because they did. They wrote and filmed as they went, and trying to keep it as ambiguous as they could until filming. Yet they weren't a fan of ad-libbing, which I found bizarre.
Maybe they just weren't good at it.
Yeah, that seems to be the case.
So for whatever reason, I think the combo of Billy Wilder and Jack Lemmon worked out well for both of them.
You think so?
I do.
I do. This is probably one of my favorite Billy Wilder films. It's not as campy as the others that I've seen.
Campy?
Yes. Well, like
what
you've mentioned.
What others have you seen?
Well, Some Like It Hot is quite campy with Jack Lemmon also, you know, so it's definitely a departure from that.
Yeah, that's not quite the same film.
No, not at all.
I do find it odd when I see the descriptions of this movie and they do call it a romantic comedy.
Well, technically it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
I mean, when I think romantic comedy, I think When Harry Met Sally, which isn't quite as dark.
Which has more romantic and more comedy.
True. I mean, I think this is a funny movie in a really twisted kind of way.
Well, yeah, there's funny parts, but I don't even know that I would just call it an out-and-out comedy either.
See, I would call it a dark comedy. There is some sense of hope at the end.
True.
So yeah. It's not that depressing.
Do you think they
both... I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily just a straight-out drama.
Do you think they both go back and work for the company again?
No.
After the credits roll?
No.
Do they blow town together?
No.
They don't leave?
I bet they stick around.
In the same apartment?
Yeah, why not? It's the apartment. What are they going to do? Find another apartment?
She never really had her own place to live, so.
Yeah, she lives with her sister, so. Yeah. No, I like this one.
So, on a 5-star scale, what would you give this film?
You're going to probably disagree with me. I'd say this is a strong 4.5.
Walter?
5.
Wow. I didn't think you liked it that much.
High praise.
I do. I think I was in my top 10.
Wow.
Awesome.
Well, no, I was going to say 4.5 also. Why, did you think I would do higher?
Yeah. I thought you would do higher. I can see some flaws with it as well.
Yeah, but I couldn't say what. You know?
Some of the other characters are a little irritating.
Yeah, I think in those earlier scenes, Ray Walston plays one of his bosses. But I think he's supposed to be that way, too.
So. Yes, I think he is, but at the same time, a little goes a long way, and they kept replaying that idea over and over.
It was nice to see Larry Tate from Bewitched as one of his bosses, though.
Yeah, looking for about 2 minutes.
Looking exactly the same as he did in Bewitched.
Hey, he was the boss there, too.
Some guys own a look, don't they?
They do.
So, any final thoughts on The Apartment?
I liked it. I mean, I don't
know.
It's going
to go right on their box cover.
I liked it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think it's a dark film. It's not something you want to watch, for kicks and giggles to cheer you up. I mean, it definitely makes you think about how people use one another and...
Jesus, it's not Schindler's List.
Our role in society. No, but I think...
Well,
maybe as a woman, it appeals to me differently.
I think for me, too, it shows how people can be in these crowded places of a city or an office and still be alone, more or less, you know?
I suppose.
And they were all looking for connections with other people.
Hmm.
Sometimes they made them. Sometimes they made them in inappropriate ways. Sometimes they didn't make them at all.
Hmm. Okay.
So, Walter, if this is one of your top 10 movies, what is it you like about it?
It's just a good movie.
Well, darn it.
Well, I mean, there's nothing, I don't know, particularly outstanding I can say about it.
Yet it falls into the top 10. Okay.
Well, yeah, it's a good movie. I mean, there's nothing particular I feel like I can say about it, though.
It is weird, because there's nothing really groundbreaking, I would say, about it.
Well, I think... you had mentioned this while we were watching it. We both kind of thought, wow, they really, there's a lot of implied sex going on.
Yeah.
You know, for this time, that seemed a little racy, maybe? I don't know. I mean, neither of us were alive at this time, so who knows? Maybe that wasn't as racy as we thought, but there was definitely, like, the puritanical ideas were in the home, but all the sex was at the office.
Well, and we also talked about, they showed that Christmas office party.
Yeah.
With people making out in different offices and cubicles and stuff, and people getting liquored up and dancing on desks and things, and
there's probably a reason our generation never got to do that.
Well, that's kind of a cliche in TV shows and movies, and I always wonder, like I said when we were watching it, if that was a real thing or not.
But well, I guess that whole era, I wonder how much of that was a real thing.
But we did see, like you said, in Mad Men, how much drinking was going on at the office and at lunch hour and whatnot. So
I don't know why this film reminds me of Mad Men so much. In a completely different era.
Yeah, same time period, but in an office setting, and people dressing for the office. Same city, right?
And too many people having sex with people they shouldn't be. Or should be.
Yeah.
Kind of bizarre.
Well, I think that's about it then, huh?
It'd be funny if they did a remake of this.
A remake of The Apartment? Like, set it in modern day?
I mean, that's kind of similar to 500 Days of Summer. Except that's more depressing.
Didn't see that film. Is that the one with Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Yeah, and what's her name? Zooey Deschanel, before she was famous.
Before Elf.
Well, no. After Elf, it was before she...
For her TV show?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's called...
That Girl. No.
That's Marlo Thomas.
I know.
I don't know. It's another one
Something
of those fun nerd comedies.
I know.
So that is the number 93 movie on the American Film Institute list.
93. Woohoo!
Moving on up. That's going to do it for us. If you have any questions or comments, write to film.scene@yahoo.com and look us up on facebook.com/filmscenepodcast. And also we're on Twitter @filmscene1. And when you get a chance, give us a rating and a review on iTunes as well. Until next time, I'm Tim.
I'm Karen.
Walter.
Thanks for listening.